This podcast contains strong adult content, probably crude language, and general fuckery. So put those kids away. Get them out of here.
Good evening. In a landmark ruling, the Supreme Court today legalized abortion.
Huge increases in sexually transmitted diseases.
Transgender rights is a fundamental human right.
There is a right to marriage equality. I repeat, speaking to you from the steps of the Supreme Court, there is a right to marriage equality.
Should sex education be taught to our kids?
Rolling back contraceptive coverage for women.
To make sure that women get the health care that they need. So we've got a lot of work in front of us. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we're back, and it's Frisky History, and you're here.
It's 2022.
And it's 2022. We haven't done one yet.
Not yet.
Until now.
Here we are.
Yes, I'm Robin.
I'm Lacey.
And we are coming in hot with these New Year's resies.
Physically hot. Mentally hot. Emotionally. Yeah.
Hot.
Very cold.
Real, it's dismal, but yeah. You know, we're hanging in there, and we got an episode out hopefully before February, which is great.
That is great.
I mean, that's all I could
we're
ask
trying
for.
To be as careful as possible with COVID. Mm-hmm. And also we are just not good at doing things.
Everything
we're doing our best.
Really hard, and I think we say this every time, but it's hard to do anything at all.
Anything at all.
So
it's like the new year happened, and I was like, oh, it's the same. Everything.
Yeah, there's
just
nothing
as bad.
Like, whoa, wow, what's no new year? Same shit.
Same
am I
shit.
Right? Yeah. So. To be a bummer, I'm bringing in a topic that is a big, big bummer. So, and I know that's not always my style. That's usually Lacey's
It's
route.
Usually for me.
Yeah.
I'm feeling a little bit like you're coming for my brand. And I feel like you think I'm just replaceable. Like, you think you can just be as depressing as me with no practice.
It's going to be hard. Because I'm just so bubbly and positive. Why are you laughing so hard?
It's one of my favorite things about you is how bubbly and positive you are. It's how I describe you immediately to every person. They don't even ask about it. And you're not even a topic of conversation.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. So get the giggles out while you can. But no, it's a heavy one. And sorry to start the year off this way, but also like look around.
Yeah.
Is anybody having a good time?
Nobody.
Because everyone should be fucking sad right
now.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying the ongoing meme video trend of just being like, we're done with self-care. We're going back to doing drugs. And I'm like, that sounds good. Let's just go back to doing drugs this year. I don't want to do... I don't want to be a part of this.
No, we tried the self-care thing.
We tried to take care of ourselves
for
and
so long.
Be understanding and give ourselves a break and compassion and whatever. And I'm like, just give me, can I have some drugs, please?
This is, I mean, it's all coming together for me why Euphoria is coming out now. And it took them so long. And they were like, this is when we know we're going to drop this right when people are ready to.
Get back on drugs.
Got addicted to drugs again.
Euphoria doesn't make it look any fun, though, which is...
That's true.
That's the dark side of drugs. I'm going for the happy, fun side of drugs.
That's fair.
And I am of age, okay? I know
I'm
you might not be able to tell
as well.
Based on this podcast.
To do heroin.
By the sounds of our voice. We are old hags.
We're old hags.
We are above 18 and or 21.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depending on what the drug doing age is. I think it's alcohol. I think it's 21, right?
Cause you I think it's 21.
It's like drinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or for the rest of them, no age because it's all illegal.
That's
but
right.
But fuck the law.
Fuck the law. We're doing drugs.
We're doing drugs.
Because this, I mean.
Big news.
Yeah. I'm gonna snort my 4 free COVID tests. And I'll let you know. I'll live stream it. Oh my God. I don't even know how to tell jokes anymore. This is horrible. So
that's why we need drugs.
Oh my God. So, okay, let's get into it.
Let's go.
Like I said, it's a heavy one. And right up front, I do want to give a content warning. We're going to be talking about the history of eating disorders and specifically how race plays into eating disorders. So listener discretion is advised. I also very much encourage everyone to listen to Code Switch, an NPR podcast that did an episode about race and beauty and how the two intertwine in really ugly ways. And the title of the episode is Ask Code Switch, What Does Race Have to Do with Beauty? And they included a whole section about eating disorders, specifically in the Latinx community. So that's what made me want to look more into this subject. If you want to hear people do real interviews and like hear these stories, I highly suggest you going over there. It is a very good episode. Okay, so I will start off with the history of eating disorders, and we'll go through and try to define the different kinds because there are many, and they all obviously have negative impacts on the body, but not necessarily always in the same ways.
Mm-hmm.
So eating disorders are severe psychiatric illnesses influenced by many factors, including genetic predisposition, environmental stressors, neurobiology, psychosocial stressors, and more. They don't discriminate by age, gender, socioeconomic status, nationality, culture, or race. Eating disorders have been identified around the world, including within ethnic minority groups, demonstrating the non-bias of these illnesses. So there's anorexia, which is an eating disorder characterized by a fear of being overweight. Symptoms include trying to maintain an abnormally low body weight through starvation or too much exercise. And I know, like, we know all of this. I just want to, like, cover all the bases.
Sure, yeah,
and
just, gotta,
like, lay the groundwork because there's, like, a lot of assumptions and stereotypes that are, like, offered with eating disorders. So mm-hmm. just to get the whole picture. So anorexia was rare until the second half of the 20th century, but it did exist before that time. The first descriptions of anorexia in the Western world date from the 12th and 13th centuries, most famously St. Catherine of Siena, whose denial of food was regarded as a form of asceticism, which is a way of fusing with Christ through shared suffering.
Huh.
She starved herself to death and was later canonized, which means she was officially declared a saint. Yeah, pretty fucking loaded. And then by the 16th century, ascetics were considered witches and burned at the stake. So therein lies this, like, really conflicting, these conflicting and confusing viewpoints of eating disorders already. It's like, okay, one woman's a saint, the other's a witch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, yeah, it's bad news all around. So,
yeah, and just both so not helpful, like one rewarding and or punishing.
Right, exactly.
That's just like the terrible ways to handle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like, how can we help you? It's
right.
Like, this is your problem
how
and there's
help
no
you
fixing it.
Get healthy and
yeah.
feel.
Yeah. So it's like, even from these early, early years, it's like people were treated so differently. And I think it also had to do with just how, like, wealth and, like, status and things like that. But we'll get into that later. So there are several other clinical descriptions of anorexia in the 17th through 19th centuries. And in the early 20th century, anorexia was considered an endocrine disorder and treated with pituitary hormones. And don't ask me what either of those are. I don't know why I didn't look those up, but
I know. Okay. I actually just recently learned, heard pituitary in an episode of Fringe, because we're watching Fringe.
Oh my god, well, and I forgot
it's a
about
thing.
That show.
It's they've just put it on Prime, maybe, so we're just watching it all. And
amazing.
It's definitely something in the brain. It's like a part of the brain. The pituitary gland is in the brain.
True.
I don't know what it is outside of that because I've forgotten.
Thanks, Fringe.
But thanks, Fringe.
Wow.
So something they I'm assuming is created in the brain.
Yeah, and I think that is more the mental health angle of like this is eating disorders are caused because of mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense, and I could have probably derived that just by like looking at the sentence.
Or we could just learn everything from Fringe.
That's true, and that's a great resource, everybody. Yeah, if you want to turn to Fringe,
yeah, they should be teaching that in school.
So okay, let's see. And now, so we'll move on to bulimia, which is when a person binge eats and then purges via exercise, vomiting, or laxatives. It's first described among some of the wealthy in the Middle Ages who would vomit during meals so they could consume more. So that's an example of an eating disorder being a sign of huge wealth and just consuming and consuming and consuming.
Mm-hmm.
So the cases of anorexia and bulimia escalated in the 1970s and the 80s. Spreading beyond the upper class. And while most scholars will point to cultural pressures for thinness, increasing depression, obsessive compulsive behavior, and increased dieting behaviors as causes for eating disorders, we also have to consider that the 70s and 80s saw the rates of obesity in the U.S. Begin to increase at an unprecedented rate, and low-fat eating began its popular progression through the mainstream. So it seems like eating disorders sort of went both ways, and there were extremes on either side. There is also binge eating disorder, which is when a person binge eats but does not purge. This disorder has also been described for centuries, but seems to have only escalated recently. It's also less likely that folks with binge eating disorder will ask for help and receive the correct treatment, considering this society values certain bodies over others. And there's a lot of fat phobia layered into healthcare and society's treatment of folks with binge eating disorder, especially for Black folks. So in the 19th century, a white male scientist from Northern Europe developed theories about race and evolution that categorized people hierarchically. they determined that heavier bodies were more frequently observed in people of color, and fatness was therefore deemed an inferior trait. And during the period of the slave trade, colonists and race scientists asserted that Black people had, this is horrible, they had, you know, greater appetites for food and sex. They were described as gluttonous and therefore virtuous in a Protestant culture that valued moderation. So really loaded, layered bullshit that almost like, yeah. I mean, and when you're hearing a 19th century white male scientist from Northern Europe develop theories about race and evolution, you're like, uh-oh.
Already red flag.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, I feel like the increase in, or like, the fact that eating disorders became more widespread in the 1970s and 80s, like, one thing, too, that we just, like, I feel like mental health and learning about it and taking it seriously and normalizing it and developing treatments and, you know, encouraging people to get those treatments and making them accessible, which is still not great in that area. But I feel like that is something that just, it seems to lag behind so many other things, like just the act of actually like moving mental health forward. I feel like there was so long when it just like things were like you read about things being diagnosed in wrong ways or being treated in terrible ways, mm-hmm. Or being called something that they're not, whatever it is. Like, I feel like those, you read about those things and then you see the year in which you're talking about and it's not that long ago.
Yes.
So it's like the, I feel like that also is just like not, like, I don't know how many people in the medical or mental health industry in general, like, how many people really cared about it? Like, were they treating it? I don't know. I'm right. It's kind of a question. It's kind of a, just like a
right.
thought, like,
right.
based on what we've learned in doing this podcast, is just that they don't, it doesn't seem like it's anywhere near as close to, like, the rate at which things grow. Like, mental health has always been, like, mm-hmm. slow and not taken seriously.
Yes.
And
yes.
not been accessible.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I'm not surprised that the, like, peak yeah. of it would meet at a time when it's like, what did mental health care even look like?
Exactly. Then? Yeah. It's scary. It's like, it's, yeah, straight up dismissed or misdiagnosed or brushed off or. Yeah.
Maybe even treat, I don't know, like, maybe even treated more as like a physical health problem when it's
exactly.
like.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, but you think about different things that, and like things that are stigmatized and how they were, how the illness was treated and how the people were treated. Mm-hmm. And it's just a gray outlook on it. I mean, it's just not good. It's never good.
Yeah. No, exactly.
I'm sure it's still an issue, of course. I mean,
yeah, it definitely is. And I think, like, what also plays into it is, like, this is a good segue, I guess, into this next section. But it's, like, the stereotype of someone with an eating disorder. You hear of an eating disorder and you picture, like, a young, straight, affluent white woman who's, you know, abnormally thin. But in actuality, like, black teenagers are 50% more likely than white teenagers to exhibit bulimic behavior. So,
And I do feel like a lot of the things, like, before we, not that it would be the, like, you may experience it before that, but you may not know what it is or have, like, a name for it. But I feel like so much of the things, so many things like that we're taught from pop culture.
Right.
You know, like, I can remember, I think, if I'm, I mean, I'm pretty sure I can name the first time I saw an eating disorder displayed in a movie and or TV, you know, in pop culture in general, like, other than, I'm pretty sure it was before us, it became like a big, when we became trash people that tortured celebrities and put them in tabloids for our entertainment and ruined their lives. It was probably before that. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, but it's just like, we're, because we, like, quote unquote, learn so many things, because I'm sure that everything that we're learning from it is not an accurate representation, but it's also, there is a lack of representation within our pop culture because we always focus on, you know, white, cisgender, heterosexual people, or they're the focus of stories, whatever it is. Like, they've had such, so much more representation that it's like, that is the picture that we then build in our minds. Yes. And it's just like, all of it is unhealthy and inaccurate.
It's so true. It's like these, you know, the stories, you're right, the stories that you see on TV and in movies is like always like a model or
a ballerina
or a young, ballerina, like a young, like a white teenager.
Yeah.
Like, every example I'm thinking of, it's just like a white woman. Not that they don't struggle with that, of course they do, but it's, there are so many other stories to be told.
Right. And there is harm in building a viewpoint based on such a small picture.
Yeah.
But that's all that we, like, that's all that is pushed, you know, widespread. So it's like, if you're not taking it on yourself to learn more about it or get educated on it or have the access or means to be able to educate yourself on it in any way, like, there's just, you don't see anything else. And that, you know, while I agree that I definitely don't think that white women aren't suffering from eating disorders. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that, I'm 100% sure that they are, as, but it is definitely still harmful that we're not seeing a larger picture and really understanding the, like, accuracies and,
yeah,
you know, like, I don't know what I'm saying. So I'm gonna stop
talking. No. It was perfect. It was perfect. Perfect. Very well said. But yes, to paint the full picture, you really do have to dig for this information, and you have to be looking for it. Like, it's not going to just pop up, which is, it is harmful. It's harmful to those marginalized communities that are suffering from this as well, if not more so. Going off of that, Hispanics were significantly more likely to suffer from bulimia nervosa than their non-Hispanic peers. There was a study that was done that reported a trend toward a higher prevalence of binge eating disorders in all minority groups. And over time, as more mixed race people came into being, the dominant white group used thinness as well as whiteness in order to continue to assert their dominance. And that's why it's very likely that fat phobia originated as anti-blackness. Mm-hmm. Some of this is a little out of order, I'm realizing, because before you came over, I panicked and was like, oh my God, it's all wrong. And now I'm like, it's truly worse. So, but I'm trying, and hopefully the message is getting across. I'm like, I have to nail this because it's such a heavy topic. And here I am just stumbling through it. But I'm hoping that I'm getting the message across. I think so. Holy shit.
As the only other person in the room who can speak to this.
Oh my God.
Because I am the only other person in the room. I think so.
Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. That was an extremely confident answer.
Thank you. So let's see. Okay. So the findings that Black women on average are slightly bigger, and the assumptions that they therefore, you know, prefer being bigger and also experience less cultural pressure than white women to conform to the thin ideal. This creates the mistaken impression that they do not develop eating disorders. So people just assume that it isn't an issue because of the visual that comes along with, like, eating disorders and that stereotype. So all of this being said, people of color are far less likely to receive help for their eating issues. A 2006 study asked clinicians to read passages about a fictional character named Mary with disturbed eating patterns. The ethnicity of the character was manipulated to be Black, Caucasian, or Latina in different parts of the study. Participants were asked whether they believed Mary had a problem based upon the passage. And the results showed that clinicians were less likely to diagnose a person of color with an eating disorder, even if the symptoms were exactly the same as those presented by a white patient. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the consequence of that bias is significant, to say the least. And also the treatment that people of color might receive for eating disorders might not actually be culturally sensitive. So, for example, it's much harder to find a doctor who's not white that treats eating disorders. And as we've said, like, the imagery used to depict treatment centers are almost always featuring super thin white women. Mm-hmm. So it's like, when you don't see yourself in these places or represented in these places, it's like, what are you? It's, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's I mean, obviously, it's an issue that the medical industry as a whole has in every way that you just described, and that, you know, that Black women their illnesses will not be taken seriously by a physician, or they won't be given treatment because their doctor doesn't take them seriously, and, like, you know, doesn't listen to what they're saying, really, you know, and just assumes something, or what people or what, like, medical students are taught. Some of those things are just, like, unbelievable that that is something that's happening. But I also saw not that long ago, there was a thing kind of floating around on social media that was someone created a diagram of a pregnant woman where they show, like, in medical diagrams, it's like like almost like a haft thing, and you see the baby, inside the diagram of a person's, like, full biology. I don't know how to talk about about medicine. Their inside parts, you know.
That's now.
Yeah, but someone someone, like, pointed out that it was the, so the body and baby shown, the pregnant woman's body and the baby shown, were they were black, and people were like, we have never seen this before. Literally have never seen a representation of a person who wasn't white in any case in, like, a medical diagram. So, like, seeing a black woman in medically accurate depiction of you know, pregnancy. I'm sorry, so not smart enough to talk about medical things, so I'm, like, trying to find the words to, like, describe what it is, but, like, I think you understand, everyone understands what I'm saying, and I'm just doubting that I'm making any sense, but it was just, like, one of those things where you're just, like, how are we so far behind still and continue to be in Arnie? No one's even doing, like, I saw on that in that same line, like, a student, a medical student, created an entire book where the all of the, like, depictions, medical depictions, were of people with, like, darker skin tones across the, like, a range of darker skin tones, and it was like a student had to make that book because they were like, I don't see this anywhere in all of the, like, things I'm being taught in all of my textbooks. I don't see it anywhere. So, like, we're doing absolutely nothing to solve any of these problems. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe some I'm sure there are people doing things. As a generalization on the medical system as a whole. Maybe I should say not enough is being done.
Sure. Yes. It's far too late for this to be done.
It's and it is, like, yeah, so it's just, like, one of those things where I'm not surprised to hear that it,
of course,
reaches yet another part of healthcare.
Yeah.
And isn't it, like, it's just, it's, you know, sometimes just, like, you're like, yeah, that's fucking, as weird. We are that bad, and I totally believe that.
We are. We sure are. And
no one needs to convince me otherwise, because I totally, I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah.
As awful as it is.
It's horrible. And it's like the people, I think, always making these diagrams and these treatments are, like, largely white in the healthcare system and most of the time male. So it's like when they're creating these, I guess, same thing. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. But it's like when they're, all they're seeing are, like, white patients and their colleagues are white, it's like that's all they fucking see.
Right.
And they might not even be doing it on purpose, but it's like this, you know, instilled this unconscious racism, and it's just, like, really.
And we update editions of textbooks and things all the time to include new terms, new discoveries, new treatments for things that have come out, and yet, like, no one thought, maybe we also update some other things that could maybe as a whole make our entire industry better, and we should change the way we teach about these things so that they don't continue to spread within the healthcare system.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah, this is definitely a much larger issue. Like, the issues that I'm seeing within, like, even just treating eating disorders is, like, this, I mean, it can't just be an issue with this, you know, it's everywhere where all of the research is focused on maybe, or largely white patients or participants in studies and white doctors and whatever, but it's fucked, and it's, you know, we should have done something about this a very long time ago, but here we fucking are. So just trying to bring light to it, because it's like, this is not something that I have thought about, because I've never struggled with an eating disorder. I am a white woman, so it's like, I, you know, learning about this, I feel like, you know, fuck, you know, we should know about this, but just trying to spread the word a little bit, I guess. I don't fucking know. Whatever. I don't know why I'm talking at all. Ever. Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. So... I ask myself the same thing every time I open my mouth also.
So, finding treatment for an eating disorder is difficult for everyone across the board, even if you fit into the white stereotype and if you have good health care. Like, women's pain and women identifying folks as pain and the experiences, they're too often dismissed throughout healthcare. And just trying to talk about the additional barriers that come with being a person of color and with a disorder that people don't believe that they have. So according to Very Well Mind, which is a publication focused on mental health, there are a few reasons why Black women and Black and Indigenous people of color experience eating disorders differently than the stereotypical like white image. So one is, as a marginalized racial group, Black women experience stigma, and this stigma in turn increases the risk for all kinds of mental health problems, including eating disorders. And as a consequence of institutionalized racism, Black women also experience greater poverty and have less access to health care than white women. They may be more likely to experience food insecurity, which can be a risk factor for an eating disorder.
Yeah, it's so, I feel like food insecurity is not talked about enough when it comes, like, we have built, capitalism has built a multi-billion dollar health and wellness industry. I mean, you know, it's everybody, like, all the tips on being healthier and getting healthy and, like, making people feel bad for not being healthy or, you know, but like when, when you, but no one ever fucking, none of those people ever fucking talk about all the people who push health and wellness, who make money off of it, the fucking Whole Foods fucking president and his, if everyone just started eating healthier, we wouldn't need, just getting, I'm getting mad now, but no, I'm keeping
course,
it together.
Of course.
The Whole Foods guy who fucking runs Whole Foods and owns all, not runs, he doesn't do anything, he sits inside him office, makes tons of money off of it. The guy who owns Whole Foods, I don't know, CEO, whatever the fuck he is. He like actually said that if people just started eating healthier, that we wouldn't need like a free healthcare. And it's like, no, that's
like, what the fuck?
Like, kind I understand of, that delusional. You are protecting at the moment your income, your tons of money that you don't need, but like that's the wildest thing I've ever heard anyone say, and it's couldn't be farther from the truth. I mean,
yeah, that's fucking
produce
dangerous.
Deserts, food insecurity, like people can't afford or access healthy foods because we don't prioritize healthy anything in our country. We prioritize money and power, and that never leads to the good of all people for common you know, health choices. Like people just like, we don't take care of people.
Correct.
So
yeah, exactly.
Think it's just like something that I just really get tired of hearing from every health and wellness thing ever.
Yes.
Because
it's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, we throw away, and like stores, big chain stores will pour chemicals on the food that they throw out so that people can't come and get it. Like, you know, like houseless people who are going hungry can't come and steal the food out of our dumpsters because we've poured Clorox all over it. And it's just like, I'm so fucking tired of hearing about quote unquote health and wellness when like that's not what they mean. No. They don't mean either of those things.
Yeah.
Because you're no one's being helped. You they don't mean, no like, one gives a fuck about our health, our wellness. Like that's just the most bullshit thing I've ever heard, and it just makes me so mad every time I see things like advertised and pushed onto people and see people suffering from a like system that's been built like this from a like from the standards that have come off of, you know, like societal standards, beauty standards, whatever it is, like the pressure that has been built around this, and it's all lies. Like, it's all for lies.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even mean any of it.
No, it's fucked. And I think, like, what's crazy about, like, the health and wellness industry is just that it, like, it's kind of, it's, like, killing you with, like, a smile almost, because it's like, no, come to this side. We actually take care of you. And that's what's so dangerous about it is, like, people get sucked into this shit and, like, spend all their money on all these, you know, herbs and essential oils and all of, like, and vitamins, where it's all, and, like, if you dig into that shit, and it's all made by, like, one guy.
Yeah.
So it's just as fucked up as everything else, and I can't trust anything, and I'm just,
yeah, everything is,
we're jaded, so whatever. So just do drugs, I think.
Yeah, I think this is the main point of this podcast is we're just gonna go do drugs.
Yeah. Weed is great, though. That I know. Listen,
for our health and wellness,
I do really like it. I highly recommend your money to the weed industry.
Honestly, that's a whole nother.
I know. Don't.
Oh,
even.
God.
Fucking God. Sorry, everyone.
No, it's okay. It's. I mean. Oh, I thought you were apologizing to me.
No, I would never.
No, I am sorry for anyone who. Maybe listening, probably not. They probably turned it off by now. But
no, it's really hard not to just tie all this shit into the larger picture of how this country doesn't give a fuck.
It doesn't, and I just feel like we all talk about the wrong things.
Exactly,
and like we are set, the conversations that that are pushed, and you know that the things that we think matter are just, no one's talking about the right things. Yes. Again, I don't mean no one. I know there are people out there who are doing good things, and like actually doing it, but we're not talking about them enough.
Exactly.
I only speak in definitives right now. That's all I can do.
No one's doing anything at all.
Nothing's being done. I, of course, don't mean that, but asterisk.
Yes, of course. Not, yeah. It's just, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It gets me heated. I hear you. This is a safe space. So let's see. We were talking about food insecurity, which can be a risk factor for an eating disorder. And Janine Chico Barker, a Latina psychologist who leads the eating concerns team at the University of Pennsylvania and specializes in helping students of color. She was interviewed on this Code Switch podcast, and her, like, one of her main messages was that if people are dealing with eating disorders, it's not because there's something wrong with them. It's because there's something wrong with the world, which is kind of what we were just saying. There's a lot wrong with this fucking world. So she also believes that there's a huge part that's left out when it comes to treating folks with eating disorders, and how systems of oppression and the effects of colonization have more of an effect on people of color than we might realize. There are so many ways in which people of color, especially women identifying people of color, are devalued and deemed not worthy, and anxiety and depression surrounding that can lead to an eating disorder, which is why people of color are at greater risk for these disorders. She also said that given all of this, it can be difficult for people of color to express to their families that they're struggling with any mental illnesses, let alone an eating disorder. It's sometimes hidden and pushed down because they don't want to make matters worse for their community that's already struggling in a number of ways. And those that come from low-income families have seen that the focus is always on paying the next bill or getting the next meal on the table, and it makes people with eating disorders feel like they don't want to add to that stress, so it isn't talked about. So many fucking layers to this. And the vast majority of research and treatment, as we kind of talked about, is focused on white women who are very thin. So studies, for the most part, are still done by white researchers on white women, and this does not respond to the current demographic reality of the U.S.
Another non-surprising fact.
It's just fucking, yeah. Of course, it's like not surprising. It's just fucking, you know. Okay. It just fucking, yeah. It's horrible. So, Mayling Reyes Rodriguez is a former grad student at the University of Puerto Rico who now works at the Center of Excellence for Eating Disorders at the University of North Carolina, where her clients are mostly Latinas who don't speak English. She says she doesn't know if she's even using the right tools to conduct this research since everything was developed and adapted for white women. These tools don't take into account class differences or cultural differences depending on their countries of origin.
Mm-hmm.
So one difference she's already noticed in her work stems from the trauma of immigration. Some of her clients who didn't have enough to eat from their country of origin to the U.S. have developed binge eating disorders now that they have access to food. So the trauma and anxiety of being without food for so long led to this disorder. Mm. So, and then when it comes to Asian Americans, there was one study that focused on higher income, achievement-oriented American Asian families, and research showed a higher risk of anorexia specifically. Asian Americans with eating disorders who participated in screening with standard eating disorder questionnaires often appear to be less ill than their non-Asian peers, even though clinically their eating disorder is just as significant.
Mm.
And this could be because culturally, according to an organization called Eating Disorder Hope, they often deny or minimize symptoms of illnesses, especially mental illnesses, which are considered taboo.
And I think that's like all of that is why, I mean, it's just, I feel like let me think about how to say this so that it's not a definitive statement. I think making the healthcare system and industry more culturally like responsible, like making it more based around these different things. From the top.
Got it.
Okay. Because just like hearing you talk about all of that, the like reasons behind what could be like generational trauma, what could be cultural differences, like the things that are impacting people who develop or suffer an eating disorder or suffer from an eating disorder, like the things that keep them from seeking treatment, they are all so dramatically different that, like, if you don't have a, like, culturally responsible, culturally sensitive program for something, like, not only will you not be able to properly treat a person or understand what they're going through, like, I think that a person who walks into that situation is also not going to feel safe. They're not going to feel like you can help them. They're probably not going to feel like you're taking them seriously if you don't understand what they're talking about or where they're coming from. And it's just like when we have a system that is obviously built on white supremacy, then from there, like, not taking into consideration like the reasons something is happening, the things that play into it, the surroundings, like the backgrounds of whatever it is, like, it's just not going to really be able to help someone when there are so many very specific to a lived experience things happening, like influencing it and keeping someone from getting treatment or, you know, keeping healthcare professionals from fucking really helping them because the healthcare professional doesn't know what the fuck is going on. Like, they're uneducated and
they just don't consider these like cultural differences.
Yeah. And it's
right.
Like, so it doesn't seem like it just seems like something that like didn't need to take so long to, you know, it seems like something that's like right in front of their fucking faces. And it's just like, I don't understand. I think that's the problem. I don't understand anything. And I don't understand how everything is the way it is. And like, why?
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like the fact that this conversation has over the years progressed and spaces are being created specifically for, you know, whatever it is, a community in whatever manner that, you know, is reflected like that. I think that's great that we're able to create things that are like really being able to make a safe space for someone to get the treatment that they need and treatment that is designed to meet their needs. But I think that it's not something that shouldn't be happening in like the whole system. And it's not something we couldn't achieve if proper funding and also everything else. I mean, it's not just money, but people don't care. Yeah, we don't prioritize it.
It's like actively unlearning these systems of biases, and it's like
countries built on white supremacy. Yeah. So it's a lot of issues. It's just one of those things where it's like, great, I'm glad that these safe spaces are being made, but I hope that that's not seen as a solution to the whole problem, and that our healthcare system can actually be one that is made to help everyone.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Dream big.
And like, not just say everyone, not just but say only everyone. Mean certain people, like actually everyone. Mm. And that's fucking depressing because I, we have to fucking burn it down. We have to. Like, there's no, I mean, the smirk you just gave, you're like, I already have a plan. it feels unfixable.
I don't want to encourage violence, but I also
or arson.
I'm not going to say that I don't believe that violence is the only answer. I'm neither confirming nor denying my belief that violence is the answer. I can't say. Who can say? I'm not going to be held allegedly. It's all I'm saying.
I'll just say allegedly.
Let's just say allegedly.
Let's just say that.
I'm sure it applies in some way.
Oh my god. So let's see. In 1996, there was a study done known as the National Eating Disorders Screening Program. The study found that Latina and Native American populations specifically were less likely than Caucasians to receive a referral for further evaluation or care, no matter how severe their symptoms. And this program also showed that ethnic minority participants with self-acknowledged eating and weight concerns were less likely than Caucasians to have been asked about eating disorder symptoms by a doctor.
It's just time and time again, we do things that revolve around medical history, which is so often because that's a lot of this podcast.
Yes, yes.
I just could never question how a person of color could have an issue trusting healthcare systems, medical industry, doctors, et cetera, because there is just what could they possibly base a trustworthy interaction on when it never happens?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Yeah, I just,
it's like you're already, you haven't played the game and you're already losing. Like, that's, it's just a losing game.
Yeah.
Like, you can't,
I mean, there's truly no one else. Like, it's not like we have other options. Oh, well, I can't go to a doctor because I won't get the healthcare that I need and I won't be taken seriously. So instead, I'll do this. Mm. That doesn't exist. Like, doctors are the only things that we have to help us get the things that we need to take care of ourselves, and they are the only ones with the knowledge of how to do that, and they're fucking gatekeeping it for white people.
Yep. Yeah, that's really what it looks like, and is, and does, and 100%.
Yeah, it's just like every time, I mean, I know that this is no surprise to anyone, I'm not learning this for the first time, it's just every single time. It's the same story.
Yes.
About every topic that revolves around anything in the healthcare industry, no matter what it is.
Yep. What,
no matter what, same story every time. So, like, I just don't want to hear any fucking words.
I know.
About anybody being like, why wouldn't you trust this medical thing? And it's like, how about you fucking read something? Because that's why. That's why.
Yep. It's...
What? Like, I'm not gonna ask, and if I do ask, I'm gonna be like, yeah, I'm sure you're fine, even though you're clearly in need of health care, and yeah. I am the one person to provide that to you. I will not refer you to someone else. For what reason? Even though it truly does not concern me at that point anymore, yeah. But I won't.
Yeah. Nope.
There's no reason, there is no, like, purpose to it except white supremacy. That's why.
Yeah.
I know.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's absolutely fucked. And I'm gonna burn it down. So just meet us allegedly. At this place and this... Allegedly meet us at a specified place to burn nothing down. So... So this is kind of the last section that I have, because I feel like I've driven home the same point over and over, but it is just, like, astounding how much,
yeah,
how much research there is and how many studies have actually been done to show, that, you know, white people obviously have the advantage and that it's not an equitable, playing field for everyone when it comes to eating disorders. So one other thing that can be connected to the development of an eating disorder is gender dysphoria. Mm-hmm. According to Duke Health's Center for Eating Disorders, a recent study asked 933 transgender people aged 14 through 25 if they had any episodes of binge eating in the last 12 months, as well if they had tried to lose weight in the last 12 months by fasting, using pills or speed, taking laxatives, or vomiting. And of the total sample, 75% reported at least one of those behaviors. Mm. The study also found that 73% of the 19 to 25-year-old group with low social support and high enacted stigma reported to vomiting to lose weight, but only 1.5% of those with high social support and low enacted stigma reported doing so. So this shows the importance of decreasing the stigma associated with transitioning and increasing the access to support. And that concludes the research that I've done and the studies I've looked up and all of that about eating disorders. And I tried to get a little bit of everything in there, but I mean, obviously there's going to be some blind spots. It's a podcast that we do for free. But it just is, like, fascinating in a bad way, of course. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. It's terrible in every way. And yeah, it just, I think, needs to be talked about more, because I really haven't heard people talk about this stuff. So, and maybe I'm not looking in the right places, but hopefully this gets people to learn more and talk about it.
I mean, definitely think it's a very stigmatized issue. And, like, it is for that reason, like, I don't feel like I hear productive conversations being had about it. Like, I feel like eating disorders have become, like, a real, like, clickbaity, you know, probably stemming from our days of bad celebrity tabloids. I don't know. Maybe that's still a thing. Yeah. I just don't look at them anymore, but I know we got so bad about it. But, I mean, I feel like it's, like, a center of fascination, but only in the negative sense. It's not a... It's like a stigmatized when it comes to getting help and healing and getting the help that you need or whatever that is. Like, it's that part is stigmatized, and our fascination with it is in the, like, grossest way possible.
Yes.
So
yeah. And I did include, like, a list of resources and where to get help and how to help. So I can read that off quickly just so we have Love an action item.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a book titled Not All Black Girls Know How to Eat, A Story of Bulimia by Stephanie Covington Armstrong. Center for Discovery Eating Disorder Treatment is a website, and they have a line set up for a confidential consultation on their website and resources for support groups. Marginalized Voices Project of the National Eating Disorders Association. They accept donations and lots of resources there. Nalgona Positivity Pride website includes a free online support group called Sage and Spoon, specifically for Black and Indigenous people of color. They also accept donations. Encouraging Dietitian is a website with great resources. Treating Black Women with Eating Disorders, a Clinician's Guide by Charlene Small and Mazella Fuller is also a book that is a good resource. And some Instagram accounts you can follow are The Body Is Not an Apology, Recipes for Self-Love, and Trans Folks Fighting EDs. And oh, another place to donate, UNC Center of Excellence for Eating Disorders. So you've got some good options there if you want to do something with all of this anger you're probably feeling, as we are. And before I forget, I can list off my sources for this research. Obviously, NPR's Code Switch podcast, Psychology Today, nationaleatingdisorders.org, verywellmind.com, eatingdisorderhope.com, and eatingdisorders.dukehealth.org. So, yeah, big one.
Yes, well, heavy, thank you for sharing that with me.
You're welcome. Sorry, I know all episodes like this always lead into, especially when it comes to healthcare, it always sends me spiraling and how this country truly doesn't give a fuck whether we live or die.
I actually think it might profit off of us dying more. Yeah, yeah. So maybe they would prefer it.
I think
it profits off of our suffering.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Cute. Cool. And cool. Fun and neat. So, yeah, it always feels inappropriate after an episode like that to go into misconnections, but this is what we've done to ourselves, and this is how we've set this up.
To ourselves. So it's true. We live with the shame of doing it again, and we're always like, should we stop? But then we're both like, I don't know.
I guess,
and then we just keep doing it. It's great. Very sad version of
Connections.
Cool.
Yay. So, yeah. This is the section where we read misconnections we found on
and ahead of time, we are sorry for doing it.
Do you have one prepared?
I do.
Great.
I do, and it, funny enough, kind of is like a callback to some of the other things that we've talked about.
Oh, shit.
Which is a fun Jesus. Time. Not specifically eating disorder, so that's, but drugs and healthcare. So, would you like me to go first, or?
Sure.
All right. I'll suffer through it.
Thank you. I'm like, yeah, and then I won't go at all.
I would love if you did it first so that I don't feel so bad when I have to. Okay, so mine, I actually am not sure if this is a misconnection technically or if it's an ad. Craigslist ad. I'm doing it anyways. So,
perfect.
My maybe or maybe not misconnection is entitled Want to Watch a Live Birth on Mushrooms, Seattle.
Holy fucking shit.
Somebody here.
Oh my God.
Someone here in Seattle.
Crazy town.
Hey there. My friends and I were trying to figure out the craziest thing we could do on magic mushrooms and realized watching a live childbirth would be, by far, the most incredible, mind-blowing experience that we could think of. We are looking...
This is amazing.
We are looking for a woman with child who would permit five respectful... 27-year-old men to watch her give live birth while on magic mushrooms. Can you imagine?
Wow.
That scenario happening to anyone. And can you imagine someone being like, yes, I, woman with child, would love 5 27-year-olds, respectful 27-year-olds, to watch me give birth on magic mushrooms.
Oh my God.
Compensation is negotiable, but at least $100 per person, and the knowledge of knowing that you just blew some people's mind having a baby come out of you.
Oh my
excellent.
Fucking God.
This offer may not be for everyone. You think? I mean, I think it might be for no one,
why
sir.
Why did you even put that disclaimer?
But if you know of someone who may be interested, please share this offer so you might fulfill our dream of watching a live childbirth on magic mushrooms. Thank you for holy reiterating shit once again the purpose. Maybe or maybe not, misconnections.
That was incredible. Wow. Damn it. You should have gone last because I can't follow that. That's insane.
I can't imagine what would possess someone. I mean, if you had a friend, a very close, if your sister was, no, wait, maybe not related. I don't know what the better situation is.
I don't know. You
were very close to someone who was pregnant.
Yeah.
And you were like, can I watch you give birth while high on shrooms? One, don't invite 4 other people. That's too. That is too many. You guys should have broken up at least into 2 groups.
Yes. Oh, you're right. You're totally right.
Or possibly put out a separate ad for each of you. Just, I mean, I guess the buddy system is good because you don't want just some random dude, 27. I mean, he's respectful, but we don't know you. Just standing there doing it.
Wow.
But five grown men on shrooms,
like just rent just that video we all watched.
Absolutely, watch it happen.
That's crazy. I'm also imagining this woman, like her water breaks and she's like, "Oh, I gotta text them.
Oh my God, I gotta text them and get them to the hospital immediately." It's true. And like, how do you time that out? Because labor can last no time at all, or fucking 12 to 26 to 15 million hours. I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
That's so true. It's like you're in labor for 48 hours and these guys are like, can you hurry
no,
up?
They're like, just like microdosing until they're sure.
That is so wild.
Like, I mean, are they bringing snacks? Like, what's going on? And also, can you imagine? I mean, what? No. How about absolutely not? But
it would be really funny for like probably 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Or 10 minutes.
And I then do be, feel like it could be absolutely like, horrific, though, also. You know, like the things that can happen in childbirth. Like, what if you saw some of the more rough stuff, you
know,
and you're high on mushrooms?
Oh my God. Wow.
When we said we're going to do drugs, we did not mean like that. We're going to do them in a different way.
In a more chill.
Like no childbirth required.
Just kind of staring at the ceiling fan kind of way.
Great, I love that. I'm really not trying to go, I'm not trying to do the most with my highs. Like watching a live child. Why live?
Like, just rent a video.
Just rent a video. Watch it on YouTube. I'm sure there's stuff out there.
Why do I keep saying video? Like, it's
like a VHS tape.
Yeah. Because I'm specifically thinking that one we watched in middle school on the TV that you roll in.
Hit your local Blockbuster.
That's wild.
Go to the middle school, get the rollout TV.
God.
Take out Osmosis Jones and watch the birth of a child in the privacy of a sixth grade classroom like the rest of us. Like,
God. Crazy.
Anyways.
Crazy shit. I would love to see some of the responses to that, but
I also
if
wish
you're
I
the person
that
who wrote that ad, hit us up.
I mean,
wow.
Yeah, come on. Fellow Seattleite, let us know. Did no one respond? Because that's how I'm seeing it happen.
It's in Seattle. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, somewhere out there. There are
like
5
here
respectful guys. Who asked, honestly Lord asked for that to happen to them.
Jesus Christ.
We live in the same city as those people.
Wow, I don't like that.
Small world.
mine is not going to follow that very well, but I just thought it was kind of silly.
Okay, I love silly.
So this one's in Portland.
Oh my God, look at us. Pacific North weird. Yeah.
So this one's called Reading at the Concert, which first of all, who? And it goes like this. You were reading against the wall between sets the other night, and I wanted to ask what you were reading, but didn't want to disturb your bubble. I was dressed similarly, equally as annoyed by the spatially slash vocally unaware group that pushed up to the front. You're cute, and I like your taste in music, lol. Reply with the headliner, heart.
Okay. A few things. Good call on not talking to that person, because I'll tell you, nothing says don't fucking talk to me like reading a book.
Truly.
Like, that is a full do not fucking talk to me.
No. No.
How big was the book? And were they just carrying it around all night? Was it
a Bible?
Was it an encyclopedia?
Yeah. I would love to know also the concert, because it feels very much like two 15-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I probably would have been the person, if I saw a guy reading at a concert, I'd be like, that is the hottest thing I've ever seen.
I do follow hot guys reading on Instagram, I'm not gonna lie.
Okay, stop recording. What?
That's an Instagram.
I hate that.
And it's hot guys reading.
Ew, I love it.
And that's it. And I don't know. I'm assuming they must consent to the photos. I'm assuming that the person takes it and they're like, I run hot guys reading. Yeah. Can I post you on Instagram?
Sure. Because you're hot and
you are reading. Yeah, oh my God. I secretly snapped this photo of you. Is that weird? Can I watch you have birth? That's what I was about to say. We've established I'm not a doctor, okay? I don't know how it works. I don't know.
Oh my God.
Anywho, wow. I got off topic.
This feels very preteen. Yeah, it does. Also, to bring a book to a concert feels like a very angsty, I don't like my parents, I don't like any of you, I don't even like this concert, even though I brought tickets and I'm here with my friends.
Yes.
I don't even care. I don't care. I'm going to lean against this wall and read.
I actually, as a teen, also, I did not bring a book to a concert, but I am no sports fan of, especially football. I don't get it. I don't like it. I think it's
news to me.
Not cool.
I think it's
you thought I was cool. A number one
sports fan. Sports finger.
Sports fan.
Yeah.
Go football. And I was taken, even though I was like, I really don't want to go, but they had tickets to a college football game and they were like, just come. We have the ticket. And I'm like, I don't want to, just to be clear. I don't like football. I don't like it. So anywho, I went, don't know why, took a book and just read it during the whole football game. And many people were upset with me. They said a lot of mean things to me. And I was I'm 14, but thanks. No. I didn't even want to go. I said I didn't want to go. I was just being nice. I didn't know how to say no to someone at that point in my life. I just went.
Oh my God.
I got peer pressure.
I'm gonna be a dick about it. Yeah.
But I am gonna be a dick about it. I'm gonna read a book. It's probably fucking Nancy Drew. That's how much I don't care about your football game.
I fucking love that. Oh my God.
People were not cool about it. They did not appreciate it.
That's fucking stupid.
It was stupid. And it's like, if I had a cell phone at that point in my life, don't worry, I would have been watching Netflix. Like, I didn't bring a book. Because I had other options. I had no other options because that was before all smartphones existed.
Sure.
And there was no, I guess I could have played Snake on my Nokia phone the whole time. But instead I chose to read.
Fuck. Oh my God. Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So I'm just like different. So you get I don't it. Know. I'm just like a
just crazy.
Just like a different kind of girl.
Okay. You're not like other
I'm
girls.
Not like other girls at all.
Oh my God.
So that's cute. That's cute. It's very and I have silly. A lot of questions about it, but
yeah.
I'm glad you guys you two 14-year-olds found love.
Imagine they're like in their 50s. Yeah. It's just crazy. Both divorced. They're like, I don't fucking care anymore.
Concert was like Cannibal Corpse or something.
Amazing. Okay. Well, that's it. That's the end. Goodbye. Goodbye.
We're leaving. We have nothing else to say.
We are leaving. Thank you for listening.
Yep. Thanks.
Rate us, review us, and subscribe and.
And then unsubscribe and delete your review.
Yeah.
Just to show us.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And that's the perfect way to end. Good. Goodbye. Right, sorry. Thanks. You can find us on the internet at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Our handle is @FriskyHistory. You can also listen on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, Google maybe has one. Anywhere podcasts are available.
You can direct your questions, concerns, feedback, and weird sex stories to our email at friskyhistory@gmail.com.
Yeah. So, bye. Fuck you, Terry.
Goodbye.